Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
I'm now recording.
Lovely jubbly. I'm recording too. Aren't we a fancy old bunch of podcasters, hey? That's a nice little room you're in there, mate.
Thank you. I didn't know if I'm allowed to talk now, because if this is the start of the intro, I need to stay quiet, right? And then you directly address the room I'm in. So
sorry.
I didn't have a lot of,
I'm sorry. Let's Stu shut.
You need to just shut up. You've just made a right balls up, haven't you?
What?
You've literally just chimed straight in talking nonsense after talking about farting, then going, I want to capture this. Then you just got it all wrong and started talking to the guest about his bedroom. Then you tried to get me to take over but couldn't even pronounce me name.
Listen, the part we all know fucked up first today, and that's you when you put those glasses on. And I knew.
You're looking really ginger today.
I don't know why, mate. I don't know why. It might be because I've got my light-saving device on my laptop. And it's making everything have an amber glow. There we go.
My God. Welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I'm Stuart Whiffin.
I'm Chris Glasson.
Let's just introduce our guest, because everyone's been hearing him talking anyway. Hello, Scroobie. Here's Pip.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
All right.
All the better.
I love that what people didn't get was that we were just talking and Chris was like, oh, we should start recording and capture this. And then we captured nothing of any worth whatsoever. Oh, we don't want to miss this gold. That's a nice room you're in, Pip. Cheers. The listeners will love that.
Oh, God. I just think people want this sort of start. They've had the pre-packaged opening. Not from us now. We don't do that. But, you know, that's what you get on a professional podcast. But not here. So,
You've been listening to professional podcasts?
I actually have been listening to one, which I found quite interesting. So I might throw that in there.
Series or just one episode?
Two episodes.
That's one.
One episode.
All right. Yeah, there we go. Well, before we get on with today's chat and Pip's top five, we should thank our sponsors. I'll start rattling them off. I'll start with Love Beer. Love-beer.co.uk is run by Charles, who's been a long-time sponsor and nice guy. He messaged us today, and if you go and have a little look, if you scroll back by the time this comes out, through our Instagram, you can find a picture of five beers. They're the five beers that Chris and I drank with Charles when we counted down top five things he doesn't like about Land Rovers, which was kind of a kind of bolt-on, really, to us really sort of digging into five proper nice beers. And we've spoken about it, haven't we, Chris? Yeah. These are really good beers, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to literally use the code and order some more of these beers because they were really good. Yeah,
it was really well put together, and so he's restocked, and if you use the discount code LBHCL,
don't flirt with everyone. You know what the last one is.
P.
There we go. Don't tease.
And you save yourself some money. Go on in, Chris.
Yes, our next
just
sponsor.
Just quickly before Chris does that, mm-hmm. before mm-hmm. does it. This is genuinely you can cut this out if there isn't a good answer. Was that a two-parter? Because did part two ever come out, or did I miss it?
Yeah, it was out on the same day.
I've just remembered listening to Charles. Oh, was it out the week on a different date?
No, it was out the same day, just a few hours difference.
Oh, that's why I've missed it then. It just occurred to me. I was like, oh, I was enjoying that episode, and then...
Yeah, it's a few hours difference, matey. So go back to it.
Or just subscribe.
Just subscribe.
No, I do subscribe, but it must have just not downloaded.
Anyway, our next sponsor.
Oh, I mean, even the guest, before he's even said what his top five is, he's now picking up on our inconsistencies as well.
I think you forgot to publish.
That was my inconsistency.
Yes, the problem is...
Because I remember thinking, I never finished that.
But the problem is...
I said, I've listened to two. I listened to the first one.
I listened to one, and then I half heard the other one.
That's not a thing.
While Molly listened to it. So there's a...
Right?
So...
There we go.
Okay.
Molly's
been listening to a new podcast.
Is the truth.
Sake. Yeah, all right. And then I had to sit in the car and listen to it once, and it was really good. And that was the point I was going to make, but in a different way. Our second sponsor, Egg Fried Streetwear Label. New streetwear label, newest sponsor. They produce hip-hop, punk-inspired streetwear. Wonderful, high-quality T-shirts, graphic designs, hoodies, sweats, caps, beanies, truckers, and also handmade denim. And it's all the shit. Sent out, packaged with some really cool goodies as well. You can't go wrong. You cannot go wrong unless you forget to put in the discount code EGGSALAD. And you will get yourself 15% off. With Egg Fried. Nice. So you can go to eggfried.com.co.uk. Go on,
Chris. Pick. Have you seen the film Greed?
Oh, no, I don't see. That's the one with
I thought that was the new set of Rocky films. No, nearly. It's a new Steve Coogan one, but it comes to mind because on the Egg Fried adverts you always talk about the denim being kind of a step away from the fast fashion thing.
Yeah.
Which is really damaging and really bad. And it's about that. It's about the guy who... They've made a fictional character, but it's about the real-life guy who runs either Next or one of these. But it's Coogan
and Tim Key.
As soon as you said that, it's got to be based on Phil Green, right?
Yeah, it is. And they've changed his name from Green to Greed. It's based on him. And it's... I think you'd really... Enjoy it.
I'll check that out, mate. And it's quite funny, actually, because talking about fast fashion, we've been watching, again, basically, I have to watch what Molly wants, and we've been watching Skins. And when that came out was really where fast fashion came from. And I remember when fast fashion came out, we thought, oh, this is amazing. And actually, you look at it, and it's not, it just doesn't stand the test of time at all. So it's nice to have a sponsor like Egg Fried who are doing that and making homemade products and produce. All for it, absolutely,
completely.
Bang Boom Creative is our last sponsor. Luke will be on the podcast. We should be recording that one night this week, I believe. Going to catch up with Luke and celebrate his 10 years in the industry doing filmmaking photography. And this one has to come out on Patreon because he said if it gets a general release and too many people hear it, he'll probably get in lots of trouble.
Because he's going to dig out some famous people. So that's a reason to come onto Patreon. Exciting. Absolutely. So come over to patreon.com/hardcore listing. Hear Luke's top five and a variety of other wonderful episodes. Some with our wonderful guest today. Drunken episodes like the one we recorded with Ramesh Ranganathan. And the man of the moment, Brett Goldstein. Goldstein? You can witness some very funny things happening on that podcast. So, yeah, go and check that shit out.
Incidentally, just touching on...
Go on.
On Ramesh. Mm. I mean, I know you're obviously... you're not in... in the UK at the moment. Ramesh is on... I mean, he was on everything last year. He's now on everything and everything else at the moment. every time I put a chat show on or anything, he's on there. Like, I literally, yeah, like, woke up yesterday, I'll stick on a bit of Sunday. Oh, coming up next, Rob Beckett, and I thought, wait for it. And Ramesh Ranganathan, I thought, yep, he's on that one as well. He's on everything.
Well, good on him. Everywhere. Cashing in, hey?
Absolutely.
He's one of the funniest, sharpest people I've ever met. And I know, well, used to.
Yeah. So there's not much competition. Slim much. Pickings. But that is one of my favourite drunk casts ever, because the Zoom one that we did, because I said, I think I mentioned it to Stu, the thing that I loved was we had, you know, award winning, one of the funniest people in the world, Ramesh on, Brett winning everything at the moment, Golden Globe nominated show.
Yeah.
And it was Chris that absolutely stole the show with his moment with his mum that was just absolute. It's the funniest. It's the funniest moment in the podcast history, I think. And I was so pleased that it was one of one of you lot rather than one of the professional comedians.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you know what's great as well, mate? Is, do you remember, like, if we dial back literally 20 years when I used to start fights on my mum and try and beat her up in front of my mates?
Yeah.
And she'd beat me up, Shiv, in front of my friends. And it was just, like, genuinely, I wasn't obviously trying to, like, assault my mum. But I would try and wind her up to the point where she knew how to really, like, inflict pain on me. And she would get my little finger like this and just squeeze it. And I'd just be squealing on the floor just in front of all my friends. genuinely as well. I wasn't pantomiming. I'd started something I couldn't finish, basically. So,
yeah
bitch. I think we've done all our sponsors now, haven't we?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming back on, mate. I've really been looking forward to it. Molly's been looking forward to you coming on. I'm like, well, you're not coming on, you know.
It's exciting to be back on.
Oh.
Just speaking of you, of your guys' Patreon, do you want the unreleased drunk cast?
Oh, yeah. I'd love that one.
With Big Papa J?
Yeah. I've still got it, and I've never released it because it's too messy. I don't know if it's even too messy for your Patreon, but... if you want, I'll fire it over and you can make it a Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, I could edit it.
You might want to do some editing.
I could edit it, and I could, like, only, like, the worst bits I'll take out. And then we'll just have to put, like, a massive disclaimer on it, Stu. I mean, like, because, like, with the last episode of the last one...
Because Stu looks completely uncertain. Stu's like, I'm not sure if this should ever see the light of
day. I was probably the least drunk that night.
Okay, all right. Is that the one where we were doing the Limp Bizkit lyrics with the earphones and we couldn't hear the songs and we were just shouting?
Quite possibly, yeah.
It was that.
And it had Justin's amazing story about the cinema, I think it was.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, anyway, it's an option. I shouldn't be discussing these things on air, but I saw it the other day in my folder and thought, ooh, I wonder...
Oh, there's one line that he says that would just get me corksing now.
Yeah, destroyed us all.
Okay, so, Pip, what's your top five today, mate?
My top five is top five front men / women.
Ooh.
You could say front persons, but front persons doesn't sound like a thing. So it's front men and or women.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, in music, yeah?
In music, in bands, So
not just
like,
the front
in a band.
Of, okay.
Oh, that's it. It was, not just my favourite fronts of men or women.
Back was disgusting.
Next time I'll do my top five backs.
Top five front bottoms.
They had had a mole on their shoulder blades, disgusting, but their front of them was beautiful.
Ruined it. Their front was fantastic. But yeah, and I mean, kind of like Stu often does, I've kind of imposed a few of my own restrictions because it's a hard category, isn't it? If you try and think of your top, like, it's one that can change all the time. So I decided to, or I found myself, when I was trying to decide, thinking back to live performances I've seen. So all of the ones on my list and almost all of my honourable mentions are people I've seen live. So it's kind of, it felt like a good way of gauging that as well. It's not the be-all and end-all of it, but yeah, that was kind of, I found it as a good way to filter things a bit.
Do they have to be, because they're a front man or woman, both, do they have to be in a band then? Because otherwise they're an individual artist.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, can't be a solo artist. I also ruled out like the Beastie Boys because it's like three front men.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, there's not really a front man. It's like if you've got two middle names, you've not got a middle name. So it's the same with the Beastie Boys. No, you've got
indecisive parents or posh parents.
Yeah.
Which is a curse in and of itself, I think we'll all agree. Exactly. Only joking. Right, okay. Is there any other rules? And I'd just like to say, it's normally me who puts the fucking caveats on the rules. Whiffin don't...
Right,
I mean, there was that one time when I have done some really bad top fives.
Chris, yours normally feel as if you've put caveats on because Stu has said what the top five is and you've realised you've not understood it correctly.
Top five after parties. That was the worst. Yeah.
So you go, well, my caveat is... It's like, no, you just didn't understand it. That's not a caveat. That's just not knowing what the top five is.
That was a really bad top five. I apologise. Yeah. Top five after parties. I was talking about clearing up and stuff like that. People like, that's not an after party, Chris.
So I got a bin bag and just scraped a plate of olivant straight in there. That's my number three.
Imagine how annoyed I was with your Films of the Year one when Chris is pulling out films from like 2018. You know it's the film ones that always get my goat because I'm such an obsessive, but by chance, Mission Impossible Fallout, I went to see on my birthday in 2018.
Oh, fuck me.
So when he pulled that out as his film of the year, or one of his films of the year, I was like, hey, that was four birthdays ago, or three birthdays ago.
Oh, time flies now that I'm old. Jesus Christ. Okay, well, we've flirted around enough. Coming in, what have you got for us? What's your number five? I'm guessing you're doing them in some form of order.
Again, I'm not genuinely intending to come in and take over. Mm-hmm. But can I start with one of my honourable mentions? Just because it's someone, I think Stu can probably potentially guess. It's someone who should probably be my number one, and kind of, I would say, has influenced all the ones on my list. Kind of defined the idea of a front man, but. He's become such an unbearable cunt that I can't have him in there. Wow. And not in just that he's got annoying. It's like his unbearableness kind of undoes everything I thought was cool and iconic about him. So do you want to have a guess?
Stephen Patrick Morrissey?
No, it's not. Again, as soon as I was thinking, I thought he might also think Morrissey. It's Johnny Rotten.
Yeah, well, they're both kind of
influenced so many front men, right? And iconically, but they've both turned into such fucking bellies.
What's he been up to, Johnny Rotten? Because I don't, as you guys know, I don't really spend a lot of time looking at the media or anything.
He's just
really.
Rubbish. He's just rubbish. I was watching a punk documentary on HBO the other day.
That's not the one where he's sitting there with the last Ramone. I can't think what his name is. A. Ramone and Rollins. It's not that one, is it?
No, it's not.
And Duff McKagan.
Not all together. Like all of those people appear and do talking heads. And
have you not seen the live launch of all of them sitting on stage?
No.
Well, go on. Say what you're going to say, and then I'll tell you about it. Because any kind of confirmation, what a cunt he is.
I'm watching this whole series and all these people are coming up who I absolutely adore and giving these amazing stories and insights. And I'm thinking, there's not been anything on the Pistols. And then towards the end, he pops up twice and he's just being... It's that weird thing of... It feels like he's trying to be edgy for today in the way that Johnny Rotten always was, but now it just feels cringy and shit and... A little bit right-wing and stuff like that. There was always rumours he was... racist to the block party lads and stuff like that. There was all that came out some time ago, and it was just even on that I was like, I really want to hear from Johnny Rotten, knowing that I'm not as big a fan anymore. But then as soon as he literally had a couple of minutes on there, and I was like, oh, fuck off, mate.
it's so weird. I don't know if it's a recent thing. I know that I believe his wife's been like really ill.
Right.
And he's been spending like the last few years, like literally sort of nursing her.
Nice one.
I mean, he's got to be 20 odd stone now. He's huge. Yeah. It's like very bizarre when you see him now.
Yeah.
But there's a thing where they do like a live kind of Q&A, and it's going to drive me mad what that Ramone's name is. Rollins, Duff, and I think it's Danita from L7, and they're all sitting on stage. And they're talking about punk, and then Ramon goes and talks about like the kind of New York punk scene, and you know, because there's obviously always been that kind of thing. It's like, well, you know, was it CBGBs or was it what was going on in the UK? And you know,
yeah, the 100 Club.
Was it New York Dolls and all of that? Yeah, and then Lydon starts kind of saying that the Ramones, you know, didn't really have anything to say. You know, it was all about you know, just playing rock and roll, which it was, you know, and I think there's an element of that, and but you know, obviously he gets fired back on and just sort of says like, but he's pissed out of his head, and he's just being fucking rude, like, and there's nothing, it's not laced with anything, that you kind of go, oh yeah, but he's just dropped that, and that's fucking on the mic. It's just horrible to watch.
Not even he's not really even a provocateur. He's just sort of like, yeah, just being antagonistic.
He's just like pissed uncle at a wedding that's spoiling it for everyone. And it's like, you've got a lot of fucking really interesting people on that stage that I'd really like to hear talk, and like, and they're all just looking really uncomfortable. Why he's just hammered, just talking nonsense. But I do think he's done, you know, I've seen him be interviewed so many times, John Lydon, and just be fascinating. And,
yeah.
And
well, that's it. He was always a really intelligent and articulate. Yeah, his book was amazing because it was reading that learned that part of the amazing frontmanness about him was because of illness. Like you touched upon his wife being ill. It was because he was in hospital for a year, I think, and was having all these hallucinations. And it's what gave him kind of these boggly eyes kind of thing, these eyes that really jump out and have a distinct stare. And that was so, particularly in those early videos, just him staring at the crowd or staring down the lens of the camera was like, this is a front man. Again, you compare to the Ramones, where it felt they're all one. Do you know what I mean? Johnny felt like the first in my kind of time that felt like, or in my, when I was going back and looking at stuff, he was the first one that kind of went, wow, that is what a front man is. But yeah
definitely
insufferable cunt now.
Well, said some dumb shit. You know, it's in the clues in his surname. Right, what's your number five then?
My number five is again a easily comparable one, is Frank Carter. I think just as a live performer, he's just such a ball of energy. And again, there is the young Johnny Rotten's about him. Of all the people on the list that have been influenced, I think he's been influenced the most. And the fact that I saw him with Gallows back when me and Dan were touring, like early days of touring in Brighton, and they were at the festival at Brighton. I can't remember what it is.
Great Escape.
You've gone to it a few times. The Great Escape, that's it. And I'd heard Gallows were good, and they were on about half an hour before us in a venue up the road, so I thought I'll go and watch a bit of the set. And it was just from the second he took the stage, it was just the energy. And then seeing him with Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes in small venues, and then when he moved up to bigger venues and became more, I'm a showman and performer rather than just I'm going to hurt myself and a few people. And it was just, he just felt like such a complete, gives everything in his performances, and you know that he's going to be coming out of that exhausted. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that's a great shout, mate. Like, and you know, a lovely guy as well. When you know, he just, when you talk to him, he's articulate, he's smart, you know, and he's all about positivity and love. And you know, and then what transcends, you know, how he channels that on stage, you know, it's so ferocious. And it, like you say, it doesn't leave anything, you know, in the dressing room. It's all there and it's all thrown out there, and it's just like you say, and he's honed that as well to being like, you know, elements of like a true rock and roll front man as well. He's, you know, he knows how to work the crowd as well now. He's just just a fucking great front man.
Even their recorded stuff feels live, his vocals to me. That sounds like a weird thing to say, but it does feel raw. Like and he's one of the many songs that you played for me, Pip, the first time, which was Juggernaut. When he was in, because I really liked the Gallows as well. I was drawn to him stupidly because I loved the artwork on the first record, and that was what made me get it. But when he did Juggernaut, which was years after all that. I mean, even then, still, it just felt like it, to me, got better, and it sounded yeah. incredible to hear. And it's, yeah, he has that power just comes across on just on the record. Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah,
good
completely,
guy.
I completely agree there. It's one of the few with a lot of bands of that kind. I probably would love being in the room and watching them, but not necessarily want to pop them on at home. Like, I never really bumped Gallows at home. I'd watch them live a few times, but I'd put the records on and be like, all right, it's great, but I'm not particularly drawn to just have it on my headphones. Whereas Frank Hart and the Rattlesnakes had both of those things. It had that live element, but as I said, it's as Stu mentioned as well, it's seeing someone who's so good at what they do still pushed to develop and become something more and something different. Because the fact is, his fan base would have been more than happy with a lifetime of Frank jumping in the crowd, screaming, going mental, knocking each other over, and insanity. But he's chosen to have elements of that still, but also have bits where he is a showman and more of a performer and have that variation. So that's, yeah, always good to see.
Well, mate, what inspired you to do Front Men and Front Women as well?
I found myself thinking about it. It was a weird one. Obviously, as I've banged on about a load, I'm out in Canada on my own. And you both know I suffer from insomnia sometimes. And this has been really hit and miss out here because it is such a weird, particularly if I've got days and days of not doing much, you get to the bedtime bit and you think, oh, I'm not that tired. And so there's a lot of thinking and going through your head. And one of the things after listening to just one of your podcasts, I thought, has anyone ever done top five front men? And yeah, I just started going over and over it and kicking people out and switching people. And yeah, kind of.
If you struggle with insomnia in the future, go to top five bad habits that we've released today, I believe. My number one
today, as we record this,
will help anyone with insomnia. That's what I recommend.
Great,
nice, good shout, man.
I'll give it a listen. I've not listened yet.
What's your number four, buddy?
My number four is, and again, this is one that a lot of people won't agree with or isn't very credible, but he could be number one for me if I'm honest. Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day. I just, again, in my teens, I started going to gigs. I looked earlier and it was when I was 13, because it was in 1994. And from about 13 till about 24, 25, like when I started doing music, I was all about gigs. Everything was gigs. And Green Day were the one band that I saw on the Dookie tour, and then I would just see on every tour they ever did. And it was Billy Joe. He was just so cool. Had such a distinct style about him, the level at which his guitar hung at, and again, a front man who's playing as well was a lot of the front men I'd experienced until then were Mick Jagger, Dexter from Offspring, and all these people who were just a front man, but he could do the cool front man bit of looking up and being all almost as if he's having some kind of attack as he's singing, and then when he's not, he can just be going off and spinning around and strumming his guitar. It was him and Tim Armstrong. I didn't put a Tim Armstrong in the end, but it was him and Tim Armstrong that was the two for me that felt, yeah. I remember at that time, they were absolutely everything. I couldn't get enough. I'd be there. I dyed my hair at home. Billy Joe. Me and Rick did. Me and my mate Ricky both did home dye jobs. And yeah, just wanted to be that guy in our days of going to club nights.
Did you give each other dye jobs?
Black shirt, or red tie. No, we did our own dye jobs. Mutual dye jobs. But yeah, a black shirt, red tie was my night outlook for a long time. And it was all completely Billy Joe Armstrong. And again, it's a weird one because they've gone from credible to not credible to credible to not credible over the years, but yeah, what a front man!
He's absolutely.
I mean, I'm not personally. I'm not a huge fan I thought Green Day was a great record.
Was that
half and half? I like Dookie. I think it's a great record, and as a DJ of an alternative nightclub, I don't ever need to hear Basket Case or When I Come Around ever again. But I signed out after that. There was one on the set of the album that followed Insomniac. That I thought was all right.
Yeah, that was a decent. I thought that was good, but after that, I did stop buying them as well.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think Insomniac was basically where I moved on, and then American Idiot took them to a completely new audience.
I think Nimrod was decent as well, but certainly after Nimrod, yeah. I certainly didn't. But yeah, sure. I kind of get where you're coming from, but their live stuff was fucking like it's. I think I saw them at, say, like V98, was it? The year after it? Yeah, it was V98. And that was insane. And, you know, he was just such a performer. And that was the first time I've ever seen him, front man, get someone up on stage and play their part. And just whatever that lad must have been feeling. And I'm sorry to have cut into you here, Stu, what you were saying. But what that kid must have been going through to be up there playing guitar to... When I Come Around, I can't remember what it was. It was just, I was so pumped up for that kid. It's incredible.
And you've nailed it there as well, because that's a really key thing with punk in general, but Green Day specifically, was it felt so achievable. Mm. Like, the When I Come Around video looked like just people I know just strolling. He didn't look like a front man. He wasn't your Dexter from Offspring who had his plaits or anything else. He looked like a normal... a bloke, and that's what made it so appealing to so many people, that you could be them. And then when they're getting people up on stage and going, look, literally you can come up and be us in this gig, it's just so exciting and engaging, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as we mentioned with Frank Carter, and you know where he's gone with a couple of years ago supporting, you know, being main support on Reading on the Sunday, you know, behind the Foos, like, he's, you know, I think Green Day, you know, and Billy particularly, become that rock and roll frontman. He knows, you know, they're stadium, you know, they're bands now, you know, arenas, and to make that an experience, you have to know how to do it, I think. And he knows how to give that rock and roll experience, you know, of all the kind of when to scream and when to, you know, and just all the kind of cliches. But if you go and watch a band like Green Day, you want that. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to get three fucking angry calls at CBGBs from Green Day anymore, because that's not who they are anymore. They're a fucking arena rock and roll band, and they're really fucking good at it. If, you know, I think...
Go on.
No, and I just think, for me, if I was going to go and watch Green Day live, I would not expect to be moved in any way, shape or form. I would be going there to think, I am going to have a few beers and I'm going to have a right fucking good time, because I'm going to leave my fucking credibility at the door and I'm going to have a rock and roll fucking laugh. Like, you know, if you go and watch fucking Bon Jovi, you know you're just going to get all the fucking classics and you're going to have a good time.
I see the point you're trying to make, but I think it's fucking offensive.
100% go and see Bon Jovi. I think I've said this before, but I was driving home from a gig once and just had like Virgin or something on, and they had a Bon Jovi gig on the radio, and I'm not particularly a Bon Jovi fan, and I started to get tears in my eyes, because they've got those songs that the crowd are going to get so behind and hearing that. But it's weird, because the first year I started going to gigs, in 94, the three gigs that I remember were Offspring and Green Day at like Astoria or Brixton, and the Rolling Stones at Wembley. And it's mad to think that Green Day have become the Rolling Stones at Wembley. That band I saw with just a few amps and a lot of passion and sweat, and now the band who are got a full stadium show, everyone's singing along. And I think it takes a really specific character to be able to do the kind of I'm a cool guy on stage, but also have the I'm really enjoying this and really happy to be here. Like, you normally get one or the other. You get the front man who's just enthusiastic, or the Strokes kind of we're cool but I'd rather be at home. And Billy seems to get both. He seems to have that you look really cool, but then any moment there's a break from singing or whatever, just the excitement and happiness and glee is electric.
Good shout. Good shout. Number three, please, Pip.
Number three is probably the coolest person on the list, I think. It's Karen O.
She'd be in mine, mate. She'd be in mine.
So, again, and in reality, I was probably into that one Yeah's a record. And the EP that came out before, I guess. But it was also, it was around the time that we were starting to gig and tour as well.
Yeah.
So I caught them at a few festivals and stuff like that. And just, she's just a hell of a front woman. I think she influenced, and again, another one that influenced so many female singers after that. Just her style, the videos. And again, it happens that the songs are fucking amazing. I think Maps is still possibly in my top five all-time songs because it's just
so good.
It's ridiculous. And she's just, again, it was that era where there was a lot of art rock and a lot of it did not stand the test of time at all. A lot of it outside of a two-year span in Shoreditch, you don't want to hear it or you don't want to think about it or look at the Clovers again or anything. But she was one that, yeah, just seems absolutely iconic.
So much energy in all her performances. And yeah, the epitome of cool. There's not really anyone cooler than Karen O in my books. Really, and yeah, that first record. I remember when that came out, I was working in Outback Back Steakhouse. And when I'd close up and I'd just listen to that record over and over again. And she's easily someone to idolise and worship a bit. You can easily fall for her. I'm so glad she's in your top five. She's in mine.
And again, it's that influence as well. I remember at that time as well, that coming out, I was still playing guitar and playing bass a bit and having some jam sessions and cover band stuff. And it was that instant thing of, as terrible as it sounds, all the way up, because I never saw myself as a front person, really. I didn't think I could pull that off. All before that, it was like, I want to be in a band with an amazing front man. And then as soon as the Yeah's come out, it's like, where are the women? We need the cool. Because again, it was suddenly, it became that appeal of a front woman is now the coolest thing, which I hadn't been into that many female-led bands, other than, again, that punk era, L7s and things. And no, actually, a Courtney Love, fair play. I loved Hole. But there weren't loads that I was influenced by and passionate about. And that was one that you were instantly like, I wish I knew someone who I could just be in the background playing guitar or bass or whatever else and let them be this amazing god.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, that's a great show. Yeah, I think she's just absolutely incredible. I don't know, she put a track out with was it Faris from the Horrors? Who did she do a track with?
It was
brilliant. But in regards to the Yeah's, I don't know if they're still on a hiatus or what. I've not heard anything from them for a long, long time.
She did a thing on her Instagram story or on her Instagram last year, because I think it was like the 15-year or 20-year anniversary of MAPS, maybe, and she just performed it in her cupboard at home with her daughter kind of doing a countdown as the start. And it was like, you're now a mum embracing mum life and you're still cooler than anyone currently touring and gigging or doing any of that other stuff. It was just... Yeah,
that when you talk about Art Rock, she could they did
I think they did it over Zoom
it.
Actually. I think her yeah, I think in the video she had the guitarist the other kind of key force in the years on like an iPad, and they performed it as this this isolation thing, and it was cool as shit.
It wasn't with Faris. It was a record she done with Danger Mouse.
That's what I meant. What did you
Chris was implying that. Yeah, no, I could see that in his eyes.
Thanks,
meant bit. Danger Mouse.
The single was called Woman, and it was fucking brilliant. That's worth a listen.
Yeah, it was in Chris's eyes. I thought, she did a song with Penfold? What the fuck's he talking about? But I misread it. It was Danger Mouse.
Yeah, it's
Danger Mouse that he was trying to imply.
Have you got any, Stu? Can you risk throwing one in, Stu, without ruining... Because I've ruined a few of Stu's top fives recently.
Your five was my one, wasn't
it?
That was a great start. I guess off the top of my head, any of yours from Manchester, Pip?
No.
I think Ian Curtis was an incredible front man. Do you know what? Yeah. No, I'm going to throw one in that.
Just one.
Australian
just
pit.
One. Fucking
No Australians. No.
In which case, then I'm going to go front man of the Bad Seeds. I'm going to go Nick Cave.
Yeah.
I think he's an incredible front man. If you've ever seen Nick Cave live, it's an experience. The drama, it's absolutely can be terrifying. Just the way that he has the lighting on stage. And his suits are obviously always cut impeccably, and the shadows that spark off of them, it's sinister and it's beautiful. And he'll sit at a piano and rip you in half, and break your heart. And then the next minute he'll be playing Staggerly or something like that, which is just fucking terrifying. And
both of those, Ian Curtis and Nick Cave, are just ones that are such a presence, aren't they? Or seem to be such, just they didn't have to. They don't have to do much, even though Nick Cave will, but they don't have to do much other than stand still and do what they do. And it's just this awe-inspiring.
So obviously, I can't have Ian Curtis. I never, as much as I'm old, I weren't old enough to see Joy Division, but I've seen Nick Cave many times. So I'll throw Nick Cave in there. What about you, Glasson?
Any of yours been in movies written by starring people like Quentin Tarantino and stuff like that?
No, I don't think so.
No. And George Clooney?
No.
So Juliette Lewis, I'd throw in there while you're saying Karen O. I saw her at The Great Escape. That's what reminded me of that. And she's much like that. To see, I haven't seen you yet, so I don't think. And saw her at the side of the stage, and that was one hell of a gig. And so I've got a lot of time for Juliette Lewis. And then the other one, going back to the new... You got any new metal people in there?
I've not. No. I thought I'd leave them to you.
Yeah, well, I can't help but say, if there was ever one person, if you asked me, could you swap yourself for one person, it was probably Brandon Boyd from Incubus. I think if I could body swap and talents swap as well, then I'd probably be him, because not only is he's a gorgeous man to look at. He's just an arrestingly handsome man. He's got really super cool tattoos. Like, how could you pull off a red tattoo?
His tattoos were great. Yeah.
And in his lyrics always blew me away. For there was a solid 10-year period where I felt that his lyrics were just the shit. And I fucking loved Incubus. Like, I loved them hard. When Science came out,
I think they were bigger. They were bigger in our circle of friends than they were anywhere else.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Obviously, they were still a big band, but I remember going to uni and half the alternative kids hadn't even heard of Incubus. And it's like, to us, they were like the main, one of the main nu metal-y type bands. And it seemed that, yeah, but yeah, I completely agree. I remember that era. I remember, and again, this would be hilarious to you guys because you can imagine how polite he would have been about it. I remember, or my brother found a tape and a letter I sent him when he was at uni in Wales of an Incubus album and a letter just saying, I think you really need to listen to these lyrics. I think they're amazing. And you can also imagine that Ian would have no interest in Incubus, particularly in that era. But yeah, I made a tape of one of their records and sent it to Ian because I was exactly the same at the time. I was like, the lyrics are just life-changing. It's amazing. But yeah, great shout. Yeah.
Russia, well, three or two here now.
Number
I've
two.
Lost count. Number two, fuck, whizzing to them. What's your number two, mate?
So, this one, number one and number two were close, obviously. I'll go...
Numerically, famously known for being close.
In all ways. But Zach Della Rocca.
Oh, amazing.
Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, of course.
Just, again, the... Similar as you were saying with Frank Carter there, on recording, it sounds live as well. And just the energy it gives me. I've mentioned on one of my other podcasts, I've got a playlist I put together for the character I'm playing out here. And every now and then I'll go out for a walk to get in character. And there's loads of Rage Against the Machine on there. And man, it fires me up still to this day. It's been a long time since I've gone for walks at night listening to Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, man.
But...
What you got on there?
I loved returning to it.
What tunes you got on there then? What helps you get double pumped?
Almost everything off of the first album. Again, the best debut album in all of all time, in my opinion. And then Balls on Parade.
Mm-hmm.
How Sleep I Could Just Kill a Man. Sleep Now in the Fire in there. Yeah.
There's loads off Renegades, which are just incredible. Sleep Now in the Fire,
Yeah.
Oh, mate,
how
are
you finding
they're
helping? Amazing. You finding they're helping with your insomnia? Fucking hell, you worried that you can't sleep and then you're walking around at night listening to Rage Against the Machine. Fucking hell, that'll mellow you right out.
Just coming back proper fired up.
It's just so well
just
written.
Amazing.
It's such justified vitriol as well and anger in everything that they've ever written. That's as true and relevant and important today as it was when they released that record.
There's
lyrics.
I didn't understand.
Yeah.
So much I got angry along with, but didn't know the political thing that they were
shouting
about.
Absolutely.
And now I've learned and gone, wow, this is even more powerful and more important. I saw them supporting Slipknot, and I wasn't particularly up for Slipknot. No, Kiss. Sorry, it wasn't Slipknot. Rage was supporting Kiss at Finsbury Park, and I left halfway through Kiss because... I was just there for Rage. They hadn't toured in the UK in my era of going to gigs. And I'm probably more of a fan of venue gigs than festival gigs, but I saw Rage at Finsbury Park and the Pistols at Finsbury Park around the same time. And they both just made it feel like you're in the dirtiest venue. It felt so energetic. There wasn't any of this kind of, I feel far away or it's spreading out, the energy is losing, it's dissipating into the air. It felt so energised and exciting.
It's so funny. I heard a Run the Jewels remix yesterday. I was playing it and it was and it's got Zach Della Rocca in doing a fucking and it had Pharrell Williams on it as well, and it was Zach's verse, as you can imagine. I hadn't listened to him for a while, for probably 6 months or something. I probably hadn't listened to anything he'd done, and I was just like, oh my god, he just ticks every box of a front man, and like his tone as well in his voice, it's just fucking incredible, man. And like, I love Run the Jewels, and you know, LP, I really like LP as a rapper as much as anything else, and Killer Mike. And
I agree.
But fuck me, Zach was just, his verse was absolutely pure fire. And it's another tenuous link. I also watched yesterday a Run the Jewels where some lad had, asked, like, he was in one of their crowds and he had a sign up saying, can I come up and do a song with you? I can't remember what's, Legend Has It. I will rap Legend Has It with you now. And they let him come up on stage and do it with them. And it's fucking,
it
just reminded me of the Green Day thing. Like, they said, fucking come up here now and do it. And it was some lad rapping with them. Incredible.
I think another thing that was clever with Rage was quite early on, their videos were little more than captures of their live performances. I'm sure the first I saw of Rage was him on stage and looking like he could kill everyone in the crowd, just looking so furious and so passionate that, again, I hadn't really seen that, particularly in that era of punk, I guess, was all quite cheery and light, and it was energised, but it didn't look violent, and Rage looked violent, and that was just, oh my God, what is this?
I didn't get it. I remember watching it like a thing on Passengers, which was a late night thing on like Channel 4. It was really good, and it was all, I think it's the same episode that, and I was watching it because they were doing a thing. They were following Goldie round LA, and he just released Timeless or something like that. So I was really just discovering, well, drum and bass had just been born, and I was still a fan of like hardcore, and also, as in like beat dance music, not hardcore as in punk, and also a big fan of hip hop. And I heard that, I remember it was Bullet in the Head, and it was just the end of it, and they were going, and these guys are blowing up everywhere, and I was just like, what the fuck's that about? I really didn't get it. I was a bit scared and didn't understand it at all, because it wasn't something I was into. And then like a year later or whatever, or 2 years later, that's when I started getting into it again, a lot through your influence, Pip. And then I was just like, oh man, this is just the best music. I remember you me playing that through my earphones in the back of with you in the car park of Palmer's, and I was just losing my mind over Rage Against the Machine. And great times.
I heard that it was Errol Alkin, the DJ, was a warm-up DJ at this little venue called the Gas Club, and we used to take turns, one of our mates, and one of us would have to drive each week knowing that person was going to have a shit night. but I happened to sort of go there one night when I was having a beer and not driving, and Errol played Killing in the Name, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I remember just sort of going up to him and saying, what's this record? And he went, it's just come out, it's called Rage Against the Machine. And I remember just saying, can you write it down? I think he wrote it down with like eyeliner on a bit of paper. And I remember going to Southend HMV and saying, can you get me this record? And it was like, how he'd got it up front, I don't know. But I remember getting that and then taking it to the toothbrush and going, right, let's see what this does. And it's like, to this day, you know, any of them singles from that debut album, Bomb Track, you know, Bullet in the Head, they're still incendiary. They still get the same response. And what you touched on there, Pip, as well, saying that, you know, you didn't even know it so much what the politics were back then. That don't fucking matter. You know, that comes with time and that comes with maturity and that comes with wanting to know more about the band. Its very essence is that punk fucking energy and anger that young people have and want to release on the dance floor, and that I still see week in, week out, 30 years down the line. And I think like that record could come out tomorrow and still sounds fresh.
They've got to be one of the ones as a DJ at an alternative club that have maintained the best and aged the best. Like there's a lot of stuff that I'd start to get bored of hearing at the Pink Toothbrush or whatever, but Rage was always one. It's like it still feels as fresh as it did.
Yeah.
It first came out.
And it's the fact it sparks that same reaction. It sparks that reaction where all of a sudden, the minute you hear ba-dum, dum, da-dum, dum, all of a sudden, all the doormen and security just kind of sort of sit up in their seats a little bit more because they think, all right, this is a lively one, this one. And like, because it is. You know, there was a time at that club when the owner, Charlie, went, right, you ain't playing that record anymore. And I was like, what? And he went, you're not playing Killing in the Name. And we weren't allowed to play that or Territorial Pissings for about 2 weeks.
Not.
So,
that's fucking
and we
incredible.
Was like, oh, come on. Yeah. And we did.
They had the same rule with break stuff if Chris was there, didn't they? So you get, he's in, we can't play it. We can't play it. It's too dangerous. Oh, it's too dangerous.
I'll never forget we walked into one club in Southend, Pip, and break stuff came on. We'd only been in there 2 minutes. And I think in about 5 minutes, I had a sort of like dodgy rib and my finger was fucking like swollen. And yeah. But I tell you, Territorial Pissings for me might be my all-time lose my fucking shit song, I think. And that might be a bit obvious for people.
What about Turn Around?
Molly was fucking singing that earlier to annoy me.
Amazing. Look, before Pip gets his number one out of the way, what's yours, Chris?
So this is an embarrassing confession. Talk about half read what your top five was about. Molly asked me, she went, what's Pip's top five? And I went, top five men or women or and or women or something like that. She went, that's a weird one. I went, yeah, I know. Like, so she said, what are you going to do? And I went, oh, probably a real person for once. And then she went, who? And I went, Colin from It's a Sin. And she went, well, one, that's not a real person, Chris. And two, are you sure it's just people? And I was like, yeah, I think so. So my number one today is Colin.
People.
My number one is a fictional character from It's a Sin, and it's Colin. And if you've watched It's a Sin, Colin is just the most wonderful human being on the planet.
I've heard it's amazing.
Ah, mate, we all need to be more like Colin. He's a little heartwarming.
Oh, no, I won't say.
Yes.
Colin's like everyone's favourite.
Oh,
right?
God, me and Molly just melting our hearts. He's just the Love best it. Human being, yeah.
Yeah, when you get access to that out there or when you're home, mate, that's a must see. Yeah. It really is.
Good live performer, is he?
Yeah, he smashed it. I can't imagine he would be the worst front man on the planet, I'd say, Colin. Bless him.
Brilliant.
He can open up a photo
number
shot.
One, Stu, would you like to... Or do you want any of my honourable mentions before the number one or after the number one? Because I had to write a few down because it was a tough five.
Well, I'll throw my one in, then you can run riot. I'm going to throw who I think, who when I saw live, was the greatest frontman I've ever seen. Like, his voice was one of the greatest voices I'd ever heard live. His performance was amazing.
This
I believe...
This is embarrassing. I'm blushing.
Dan Lesac. I'm gonna say Dave Gahan, because right. when I saw Depeche Mode in 1992, Crystal Palace Athletic Stadium, he was dabbling with some grotty stuff at the time, but whatever that done to him as a performer, my God, like it was phenomenal. It was like just an incredible, and the fact that, you know, from where we're from was just adds to it. And just incredible frontman, and probably, he nicks it over Nick Cave for me.
Nice, yeah.
I love it. Well, before I do my number one, then I'll throw in the three honourable mentions, if that's okay, because I do think they deserve a shout.
Greedy, but
and one of them is Tom York. Because I think he gets overlooked as just such a unique front man and such a unique presence and everything. Another one, Eddie Vedder, because I got to a point where I forgot that when I was first exposed to Eddie Vedder, it was him throwing himself off of speaker stacks and being the absolute wild man rather than the deep voice standing and belting it out. And then I've got one that would probably, if I'd seen them live, I reckon would probably have made the list, but Joe Talbot of Idols. The clips I've seen of live, he looks amazing, but just on record, he's such a good modern frontman. I think it's tough for frontmen these days because you always like someone else, because that's where we are in music. Everything's been done. But Joe kind of really feels
he's unique.
He's got his own voice, his own delivery, his own energy. It's not the same kind of franticness as Frank Carter, but it's still there. It's more, it feels like he's got that franticness and he's doing everything he can to keep it under control, which is equally as exciting to hear. Yeah. So, yeah.
There's something really primal about him as a performer live. Like,
yeah.
And I think, you know, I know that, there's a bit of bitching going on between them, but I think the last few years, seeing frontmen like Joe and Jason from Sleaford Mods, seeing both of them being at the forefront of indie music and being older guys, you know, I think's really good. I think it's really interesting that, you know, the biggest names are not necessarily these young kids with guitars. It's like, oh, hang on, no, it's actually, it's about the music.
I think we'll see more of it, Stu, as well.
Yeah.
Sorry. But, yeah, I agree.
We're just going to get the guitar.
No, not... There's a line.
He's going to learn those four notes he knew on the keyboard again.
It's a shit business.
But yeah, well, on to my number one then. My number one is a band who kind of blew up, I think, from touring with Rage and would definitely build as the new Rage or whatever, but it's Cedric Bixler, Zavala from At The Drive-In.
Good just
shout. What a performer, man. Just absolutely, the times I've seen him live, one of them was with Chris, and just the fact that he can go from Frank Carter to Prince in his performance style in one song just blows him away. He'll be the most aggressive and energetic, but then he'll be dancing and he'll be flipping the mic stand and spinning the mic around and doing a little kicks. And it's like, man, that's just everything that I want to watch and want to be a part of. I love it.
Can you remember, like, was it TFI they were on? And it was like, maybe, there's this new band. And I don't think they played One Arm Scissor. I think they played... it's Rolodex. Temper.
Isn't it? Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Like, it was. And they played that. And I remember just looking at it. And I got that when I first saw Idols perform Samaritans on Jules Holland. I had that, like, fucking hell. Like, what's going on? Like, because I'd never seen people move like Cedric. And just
his exploding from being crouched to in the air to this side of the stage to that side and not feeling like there's any way he could be controlling it, if you know what I mean. It's not like it's, I'm going to run over here now and then I'm going to be at this side. It feeling like this, he doesn't know where he is at the moment.
No, it's like parkour. It's like watching parkour in the front of a stage. He's running. When we went to watch him, he was running around like a lunatic, and we were right at the back. We were like kind of in the rafters. We were like in a good place, seated, but it felt like even being that far back, and this was a little bit like what you were saying with some of the seeing like even like the Pistols and Rage in a festival. I still felt connected, even though we were that far back. And, you know, watching the front, that's what a front person should be doing, is getting you fucking pumped up, right? That's their job, and one of them. And he's amazing at it. I reckon he could do an incredible floor routine at the Olympics with a microphone and a cable. Like someone, the way he twirls that fucking microphone, he's like, you're going to have an accident in a minute. I know. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah, so good.
I love it.
It is weird because it's like we've all kind of gone for front people that go 110%. And it's weird that, you know, because I often sort of look at Oasis, that people go, oh, I've seen Oasis so many times. And it's like, for me, I like Oasis probably as much as the next man. But they play the songs as they sound on the record, and Liam stands with his hands behind his back.
Yeah.
And great, you go and hear the songs, and I love the songs, but I don't need to see that live.
Because I'm not seeing anything. I think with something like that, you're there to see the crowd as much as you're there to see the band. You're there to be part of that unified singing along, which you can't get at home, rather than the performance. It could be just they're putting on a CD and you're all singing along.
They are incredibly written.
I mean, it wouldn't be
songs.
Quite the same. That's not a dig, but I think that's what you're there for, I guess.
The first two records completely. Would be great for that, wouldn't they? Let's be honest. Like they are something. Like, they really were amazing tunes. And yeah, like you say, you want to sing. You want to sing along and get into it beyond the performance.
I heard somebody say, which is very similar, you know, Ian Brown being very similar to Liam, you know, just, you know, not a big mover on stage as such. And people said that, you know, those that got to them Rosie's reunion show said it was like the greatest karaoke they've ever been to. Because, you know, all the words to all the songs and you're all there because of your love of this band. They're up there and you feel as part of it as what they do, I imagine. And so there's definitely merits to that as well. So yeah, I do think there's plenty of sort of more static front men that still deliver an experience, but just a different one.
Yeah, completely. Again, it wouldn't necessarily jump out in a top five frontmen list, but it might be in your top five gig experiences because of that feeling and that unity. I remember I was chatting with when me and Danny Lonner were working on some music in LA. He was saying that at the drive-in toured with Nine Inch Nails for a while, like when he was in Nine Inch Nails, and they all turned their nose up at them and didn't go and watch them at all because they turned up with like shirts and ties on and were like, fuck this shit. So he was on the road with them for ages and none of them. And again, I think they had to overcome that with metal fans, particularly in that era. Metal fans wanted you to have a black t-shirt and long hair, and that was it. And these dudes are there with afros, thin trousers on, and shirt and tie. And years later, he saw him at a festival or saw him on TV, and he was like, this is one of the best bands I've ever seen in my life. They're absolutely amazing. How did we waste that time of being either at festivals with them or on the road with them, but they all turned their nose up because they were like, they're not metal. They're not a rock band. It's so brilliant.
And I mean, completely shout out Trent Reznor as well. Yeah. Honourable mention of Trent Reznor.
100%.
If you get a chance on Netflix to watch the Song Exploder series, they do one where Trent just talks about Hurt. And and it's spectacular. That, yeah. It's a really, really good watch. You got some honourable mentions, Christopher?
Just quickly. That we're talking about his voice. Again, he sounds live on a record. Even hearing him with Mars Volta, that first intro to, what is it, Deloused, in the whatever, Inertia, the ESP, fucking insane. He's howling on that. I'd say Freddie Mercury. I know he's not a big. I don't think you're a big fan of Freddie Mercury, Stu, are you really? But I do. I think we've done. Yeah, I think we did top five live gigs we wish we went to, and I think that one. I think it's at bollocks. That Live Aid one. Yeah. Did I just say Live Aid? Surf Virgin and Slip there. I think that would have been something else. And I do think he was one fucking hell of a guy, Freddie Mercury. I'll go quite basic and say Freddie Mercury. I think.
Like I'm just going to do a shout out for Dave Grohl. I just think if we're talking, you know, Green Day and these big stadium filling rock bands that give you that experience, then I think Dave Grohl knows how to do that.
We've got to this point, we've even got to Dave Grohl and we've not mentioned Kurt Cobain.
No, no, it's mad, isn't it?
It's kind of mad, isn't it? It was weird with Nirvana because I think I got into them a bit just as he died. Like, my brother was a big fan, had tickets to see him on the UK tour that was cancelled because he'd killed himself. And yeah, I think because of that, I never really, all I ever had was the records. And the only live performance that I fell in love with, but it wasn't particularly impactful as a frontman, was the MTV Unplugged. So again, in the MTV Unplugged is no reflection of their general live performance, obviously, but yeah, for some reason it didn't.
There's another MTV thing they've done, that, and they released that as a record as well, that Live and Loud, and that is fucking incredible. And if you ever hear them do Drain You, when we had Billy Lunn on, and we done top five screams in records, when he does that at Reading Festival, like, and he just screams in the middle eight in Drain You, like that whole concert at Reading, like
it's the shit.
Yeah, so good.
So
man.
Good to so watch good. It, man. Yeah.
Final honourable mention that has to be in there, and I thought of it halfway through as we were talking about Rage, is Chuck D.
Great shout.
He's a front man. It's a band, and that's obviously, yeah, so era changing or era defining and genre changing and everything. So yeah, but
yeah, that's an amazing shout. Last one for me. I can't believe I'm saying this after Chuck D, but Gwen Stefani. She was in the era of Brandon Boyd, and I'm thinking, if I could have ever been anyone in that era, Brandon Boyd, I'd have easily been Gwen Stefani as well. She was fucking. She was a wicked front woman.
How long are me and Stu going to drag this on, waiting for Chris to say Fred Durst? I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. Why?
Oh, I can't. I'm just waiting for you to mention Alien Ant Farm, then we're done.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are we kind of anyone I'm else? Done, I mean, Gwen I'm Stefani. Done. Bizarrely, I got sent Gwen Stefani's new shout, record. Really.
Oh, she's wicked.
A couple of days ago, and she's gone back to that kind of No Doubt Scar sand really? For a new record.
She was great in that Tragic Queen Kingdom records. I'm always her voice in that is something else. Yeah. And you watch those initial. You watch all those videos. Exactly. You watch all those videos back then of her. Be like just smashing it out. She was insanely incredible as a front woman. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah.
Proper held her own as well in those kind of rowdy mosh pit type days where it's all elbows up.
Absolutely.
Kind of there was loads of footage of her performing and being proper killing it. It's a great show. I was kind of annoyed I didn't have more women in there, but I think all my... most of the female singers I'm a fan of are solo artists. So if you're looking at Kate Bush or Bjork or
Grace Jones,
other people, all loads of amazing people that would be in there, but they're all solo artists rather than front women.
Shout out to the Glastonbury performance of Dog Days Are Over by Florence as one of the absolute stone cold fucking. Performance, Florence knows how to front a band.
She really does. I remember us doing a gig with her. It was Florence and then us and then De La Soul in Manchester at this little warehouse thing, and that was the first time I met Florence. And all throughout the evening, I'd just every now and then feel a pair of arms around my waist, and she'd just have turned up to hug me for a bit. Again, I'm being boring and just watching bands. I'm not partying. She'd stand there and hug for a bit and then vanish off into the crowd again. And just every now and then I'd get a flyby Florence while trying to watch De La Soul.
Sexual assault isn't a laughing matter, mate. Okay.
No, it's not. Pip, thanks loads, mate.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, gents.
Oh, it's been really fun. Love it. Absolutely love it. Love having you on. Miss you, mate, as well. It's been a long time. And hope you're having fun out in Canada.
Guys. It's been fucking ages, isn't it?
So when you're home, what's happening?
Who fucking knows? Shall I stop recording now?
Bye,
folks.
See ya. Sure.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.